This is Mark Sobel, U.S. Chair, OMFIF. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Berner for an OMFIF podcast. Today's podcast builds upon prior OMFIF podcasts I've hosted on financial stability issues with Paul Tucker, Nellie Lang, and Amaya Scarity. Dick Berner has long had a distinguished career as one of America's experts on financial market and stability questions. He's now an executive in residence at the Center for Global Economy and Business at the NYU Stern School of Business, and an adjunct professor in the economics department focusing on financial stability and risk management. Before that, Dick served as the first director of the Office of Financial Research at the U.S. Treasury from 2013 until 2017. The Dodd-Frank Act established the Office of Financial Research, the OFR, to support the Financial Stability Oversight Council and to promote financial stability by delivering high-quality financial data, standards, and analysis. Prior to his confirmation as OFR director, Dick served as consular to Secretary of the Treasury Timothy Geithner, helping to stand up the OFR. And before that, he was many years co-head of global economics at Morgan Stanley. That is just the tip of the iceberg of his many accomplishments. Beyond his distinguished resume, he is one of the most intelligent, kind, and gracious colleagues I had the good fortune in my career to work with. Welcome, Dick.
Thank you, Mark. You're too kind.
So the global financial crisis exposed many weaknesses. Many have emphasized the great moderation and global imbalances. Others have focused more heavily on inadequate bank capitalization, excessive leverage, opaque instruments, maturity mismatches, unstable funding structures, runnable products, Fannie, Freddie, you name it. But data availability and transparency are other factors cited by many. We all learned in Econ 101 that for markets to work efficiently, there needs to be a maximum of information available to economic agents. You recently wrote a great piece entitled The Data Standardization Challenge with Catherine Judge. Could you tell us about this piece and what you found?
Certainly, Mark, and thanks again for having me on the podcast. It's a pleasure to be with you. Data standardization is the process of developing and implementing rules for how data are described and recorded. And Kate Judge and I believe that they offer significant benefits, both for financial firms and regulators and for the financial system. Now, when we think about standards, you and I are familiar with the standards that are used at scanners, barcode scanners, for example, people use for purchase, and they also use them in industry for inventory management and shipping. So by making identification transparent in finance and in business, that technology improves accuracy and speed and cuts costs. In finance, data standardization takes a number of forms, and one of the key things is to identify who is who. In other words, precisely identifying parties to a financial transaction. So the legal entity identifier is one of those, and there are others that identify financial instruments and so on. Standardization is absolutely critical to compare and aggregate data, and it enables firms and regulators to have more accurate and timely information at lower expense. And that's really essential for identifying vulnerabilities in the financial system and what to do about them, to manage risks in financial firms, and to have coherent information so that people can talk about the same facts. In a nutshell, Mark, good facts, good data are essential for good policy and other decisions. Well, what we found was this is hard to achieve, and there are a bunch of obstacles that really stand in the way of achieving it. The costs of implementation are borne up front, and the benefits are spread widely over time. And this is not a free thing. In addition, implementing standards requires a lot of coordination from diverse parties. People have to adopt similar or the same standards. In addition, we found that many firms lack the technology and enterprise data management systems and governances to be able to do that. And finally, in the United States in particular, we've got a fragmented regulatory structure, as you know well, which is an obstacle to adoption. So overcoming these obstacles is not impossible, and there's been a lot of work done on that. But I think it's really important to continue to focus on that so that we can have high-quality data with which to make good decisions.
Thank you for that. So Dodd-Frank really took this message about data transparency and availability to heart. As I mentioned, it created the Office of Financial Research, of which you were the first head. Can you tell us about OFR? What was the mandate and rationale? How did OFR's mission relate to the post-crisis efforts to build out a U.S. macroprudential oversight role? And in listening to your answer to the first question, I presume that in terms of data standardization in a globalized financial system, there's a critical international coordination dimension as well as a U.S. dimension, which it might be interesting to hear a bit from you on.
Absolutely. So let me start with a mandate. The OFR was set up with a dual data and research mandate to support the Financial Stability Oversight Council and its member agencies. First, improving the scope, the quality, and accessibility of financial data. And second, assessing and monitoring threats to financial stability and evaluating financial stability policies. So you mentioned the international piece, and I would very quickly say, paraphrasing former governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, we know that firms and markets are global in many respects, but our laws tend to be national in scope. And so what Mervyn said, for example, was that firms are global in life, but national in death, referring to when people have to take care of their resolution. Well, obviously, that means both the data and analytical mandates have to be focused globally because of those factors. Now, the U.S. Financial Stability Oversight Council is a national group of regulators, but nonetheless, their scope has to be global as well and coordinates with their counterparts overseas. So just to pick out a few things that are important, all in support of the council, the OFR, and we can talk about some specifics, but the OFR really was involved with providing a broad array of data and analysis to help the council with its job, to carry out its mandate to assess and monitor vulnerabilities in the financial system, as well as to develop policies and procedures for what to do about them. Sharing data among all those regulators is still a challenge, and that's something that the OFR worked together with members of the council to help with. And the OFR partnered with member agencies on a number of research and data projects, some at the specific direction of the council, others in less formal response to some of the concerns that they had.
Well, thank you for that. Maybe you could drill down, as you just offered, with a little more specificity about how you executed your mandate in terms of sharing with the audience what you actually did. I think there were annual reports. There's a fantastic OFR webpage with a lot of cool charts and statistics. You referenced the Legal Entity Identifier Project. Perhaps you could elaborate on that for us.
We'll start with the statute. The OFR is mandated by law to report annually on threats to financial stability, to develop new tools to assess and monitor those threats, and to improve financial data. And so starting with the annual reports, there were six of them while I was there, and we flagged really what were important vulnerabilities in the financial system, in securities financing transactions, for example, derivatives, in centrally cleared counterparties, to identify spots where leverage was growing in the system, and from operational or cybersecurity threats. Those are just a few of the things that were flagged in the annual reports. In terms of developing tools, there were both analytic and visual representations of those, and you referred to some of those on the website. Two of the newer ones were a financial system vulnerabilities monitor, which enables both regulators and the public to look for spots in different parts of the financial system where vulnerabilities might be growing. And when we look at back at history and how that monitor performed, you can see pretty clearly that in the run-up to the crisis, it actually would have served as an early warning indicator. A second tool is a financial stress index. OFR's was not the only one in that regard, but it indicated where stress was growing and what the factors contributing to that stress might have been. So volatility, for example, was a key indicator that suggested that stress was growing in the financial system. And others have developed similar tools, and so this is a complementary effort to knit those tools together. And then to support the council, the OFR engaged on a daily basis and on a weekly basis to coordinate on a variety of projects and issues and supply data to the council, help the council identify and prioritize where the threats arose in various FSOC committees, and presented the results of the work both to the council members, to FSOC other committees, and at meetings of the council as a whole. Probably not widely appreciated, but the work that was done on data was certainly not limited to data standards. Providing more data to the council was also very important. And I would just flag that even when one of the other agencies was actually the collector of the data, for example, the SEC collected data on money funds, the OFR took those data and made them widely available so that people could analyze both analytically and visually what those data looked like. And they were quite detailed. So for the first time, you could see who was issuing, who was investing in those assets, and what the concentrations of those assets were in different parts of the financial system. So those are some of the examples.
Well, great. It's a very proud legacy, even if data collection at times may not seem to be the most exciting task. It's very basic and essential for success, but one's work is never completed. So as you look out going forward, what do you see as the big gaps and challenges? You mentioned cyber, some talk about hedge funds, repo data, some talk about fintech. Perhaps you have better insights into what we really need to keep our eyes on and put our efforts into.
Well, first of all, financial stability analysis really focuses on what we call tail risk. That is, we're not interested in forecasting what's going to happen to interest rates or the economy. We're interested in knowing where the vulnerabilities in the financial system really are. So tail risk refers to the tail of a probability distribution, which might be the source of problems. And when risk arises in the tails, that's where we can start to see problems in the financial system. So because of that, it's important to assess the whole distribution of outcomes. And that requires highly granular data and to be able to analyze those data. Now, we live in a world of big data, as I'm sure you're pretty well aware, and as the audience is as well. But making those data coherent and being able to analyze them is another matter. And to do that, come back to the thing that I talked about at the beginning, namely data standards. Those are, if anything, are more essential for a world in where we're awash in data than they ever have been. You alluded to fintech. Well, financial technology is not something that's actually particularly new. The financial system and financial firms have been using technology for quite some time, but there's been a recent explosion over the past decade in new technology and the ways that it can analyze these new data. And I think the lesson here is that the financial system is constantly evolving, so there are always going to be emerging and new gaps to contend with because of that evolution. The system is changing, the location of financial activity geographically is going to change. New firms will arise, old firms will become less important, and old ways of doing things will be less important. And of course, what that means is that the regulatory and policy community needs to be not just aware, but have deep understanding of the forces driving that evolution and to understand what the implications of that are for financial stability policies. And I think there may be a common perception that maybe comes out of the regulations that were put in place with Dodd-Frank, that once you've got those in place, the system is safer and we can just let it run on autopilot. Frankly, nothing could be further from the truth. Financial stability analysis and monitoring is an ongoing, everyday job. You need to be aware of all these things that I just described. You need to be vigilant for emerging vulnerabilities and the way that they might be exposed by shocks to the financial system, because one thing we know for sure is that we haven't abolished financial crises, just like we haven't abolished recessions. We're going to experience another financial crisis at some point in the future, and it's not going to look like those of the past. So the question is, how do we focus on those things? And the answer is to really start to look at the sources of those vulnerabilities, be vigilant in monitoring them, and try to identify whether or not they represent serious vulnerabilities for the financial system. Let me just point one of those out. So there's been a lot of talk recently about the rise in leverage in U.S. non-financial corporations and in corporations around the world. And that's something to really keep our eye on, because leverage typically is associated with increasing vulnerabilities and threats to financial stability. Has it risen to the point where it represents a threat to the financial system? My answer would be not yet, but clearly it's something that we need to keep our eyes open to. We live in an environment of relatively low interest rates, low inflation, where there's been a search for yield around the world. And so investors are reaching and issuers are using leverage to increase returns. And in the past, we've seen many instances when that has resulted in problems, either for financial institutions or for the system as a whole. So this is something to really keep our eye on and to be careful about. And I think vigilance is definitely important here. I think also communication, not only with the public and to be transparent about it, similar to the way that the monetary policy authorities have to be transparent about their policy actions and to communicate them well. And that's part of the purpose of producing the annual report that OFR was mandated to produce and that others are now producing as well, to communicate where they see the threats, where the vulnerabilities, and how to make the financial system more resilient so that if those shocks occur, that the system will continue to function.
Well, thank you for that. I think that you have made an absolutely compelling case today for better data, standardization of data, and continued monitoring and vigilance. I very much thank you for that. I wish you the best of luck in your continued endeavors to monitor financial stability risks and highlight the need for better data transparency. Thank you, Dick Berner, for joining us today.
Thanks, Mark, for having me.